We're holding on page 156 in Rosh Hashanah, Oischof Zayin. So the Mishnayos in our Perek talk about a number of takonis that were made by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and talks about the fact that they made a takona after the Churban that the shofar would be blown instead of before it was blown on when Rosh Hashanah was on Shabbos in Yerushalayim. Now it would be blown in Yavne, and they made various other takonis that also have to do with the changeover to the fact that Sanhedrin is in Yavne. So the Gemara is going to talk about that the Sanhedrin went into exile, into Golos, in various places, among them Yavne. But first, by preface to that, the Gemara is going to explain that the Shechina did the same thing. It left the Beis HaMikdash in stages. Ultimately, we know that Shechina left the Beis HaMikdash. The idea was, it's mentioned in various places, because the Jewish people were worshipping Avodah Zarah, and it even brought Avodah Zarah into the Heichal, and Hashem said, so to speak, I can't, the Beis HaMikdash is not big enough for me and Avodah Zarah, so therefore Hashem left. But he left in stages to give the Jewish people time to do tshuva. And actually the Medrash says on it, the Medrash compares it to a king who's forced to leave his palace, and he comes back and he starts hugging and kissing the pillars and the walls and everything, and saying how much he misses them and how much he's going to miss them, and he hopes that everything will be well with them. And so the same way, Hashem is withdrawing from the Beis HaMikdash in stages. So Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Yehuda Ba'idi, Amar of Yechanan, Esem Asois Nosa Shechina. The Shechina left the Beis HaMikdash in 10 stages, v'cholam v'kroi, all of which we can learn from Psukim. We have a pasuk that expresses, that shows about each one of those stages. Ochnegnon Golsa Sanhedrin, corresponding to that. The Sanhedrin went into Golos in 10 different stages. That we know Migmara, that we don't have Psukim for, that we know B'Kabbalah, that's how it was. So first it's going to go through the 10 stages of the Shechina, and then the 10 stages of the Sanhedrin. There's a vort also from the Rebbeim, from the Friedrich Rebbe and from our Rebbe, that says also Lubavitch had 10 Golias, and how exactly to count them is a bit of discussion, but you have from Lubavitch to Rostov, and from Rostov to Peterburg, and so on and so forth, until it wound up here in Crown Heights. So, Esem Asois Nosa Shechina Mikroi. So we have Psukim as follows. The list, and then the Psukim. Mikapodas the Krum. First, the Shechina went from the Kaporis, which is on top of the Oroin, where, as it says in the Psukim, in Parshas Truma, Hashem says, my Shechina will rest there between the Kruvim that are attached to the Kaporis, and Hashem would speak to Moshe from there. So from there, it moved to the Kruv. Now, we've learned before that besides for the Kruvim that were built into the Kaporis, there were also large, oversized Kruvim made out of wood and plated with gold that Shlomo HaMelech made in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So their wings stretched from one end to the other of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then the Oren was underneath them. So as if like they're protecting the Oren with their wings. So now the first stage was that the Shechina left the Kaporis and moved on to one of those Kruv. Umikruv l'kruv, then from one Kruv it goes to the other. Umikruv l'miftan, from there it went to the threshold of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Or it can mean, it doesn't say actually which threshold, so it can mean the threshold of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or it can mean the threshold of the Heichal. Rashi says the latter. He says the Miftah means Habayis, the threshold of the building of the Heichal as a whole. Then from there it went to the Chotzer, to the Azorah, which is specifically Rashi says to the area of Bein Ha'olam v'Lamizbeach, the area. But the area between the Mizbeach and the Ulam, the front entryway of the Heichal, has a higher degree of Kedusha. Kohenim who haven't cut their hair are not allowed to go in there. Kohenim who haven't done Kiddush Adayim Raglayim are not allowed to go in there. So it's a higher level of Kedusha than the rest of the Azara. So the Shechina went there. Umichotel Mizbeach, from there it went to the Mizbeach of Pitzin. Umimizbeach Lagag, from there it went to the roof of the Heichal. Now, on the face of it, that one seems to be going backward because doesn't the Heichal have greater Kedusha than the Mizbeach? As a matter of fact, not, because in particular, the Rif points out over here, there's a halacha called Gagin Valias Leniskadshu. The roofs and the upper chambers in the Beis HaMikdash don't have the same degree of Kedusha. So therefore, yes, the Mizbeach has a higher level of Kedusha than the roof of the Heichal. For example, in principle, you could shecht Kodshim on top of the Mizbeach. You're not supposed to. You're supposed to shecht them next to the Mizbeach, but b'dievet, if you brought it up there and shechted it, the korban is kosher. Whereas if you were to shecht it on the Heichal, it would on the roof of the Heichal, it would be possible. So therefore, so it went to the roof. From there, it went to the wall of the Azara. From there to the city of Yerushalayim. From the city, it went to the mountain, to Har HaZeisim. From there to the desert. Also the Yoshua B'mekoyma. And from there, that was the 10th and final stage. And from there, it went up and returned to its place in Shamayim. Really, actually, the place of the Shechina, Ikar Shechina B'tachtonim Hosa, as we know from Basi Lagani, but we mean the place where to which it withdrew after the seven generations that it talks about over there. So now it went back to the same place. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Hashem says, Eilech Ashuv El Mekoimi, I will go and return to my place, meaning, in other words, Hashem is saying that, it was, so to speak, they don't want me here on earth, so I'll go back to Shemayim. So my Shechina will go back to Shemayim. Each of these, you have in particular one of them, the one about when it left the Mizbeach to go up to the roof, the Radak on a posuk over there mentions that this had to do with from then on, there was much less Nevuah. So each of these stages, it seems, there was some kind of diminution it wasn't just, first of all, obviously, anybody who has the sensitivity to realize where the Shekhinah is going to realize there's a tremendous change, but it seems that also many, if not all of them, actually caused a change in terms of what kind of Hashpah from Hashem is available to the Jewish people, and you could actually see differences in it. So Mikaporis Lekruv, Mikruv Lekruv, or Mikruv Lemiftan. So where do we have those first few stages? So like this Dichtiv, originally the Pasuk says, and by the way, why 10? Marsha points out, we often find that there are 10 levels of Kedusha, one above the other. Shnayis and Kalim, for example, mention that within Eretz Yisrael itself has greater Kedusha than all other lands. Within Eretz Yisrael itself, there are 10 degrees of Kedusha, with the Kodesh HaKadoshim being the highest. So the same way over here, when the Shekhinah withdrew, then it went in 10 stages. So the first view is like this. First, the pasuk says, "V'nei adti l'chasham." Hashem tells Moshe that I will meet with you over there in the Kodesh Hakadoshim. V'dibarti itchom me'al kaporis v'gomer, and I will speak to you from above the kaporis. As Rashi explains in a couple of places on Pesukim, Moshe would stand in the Ohel Moed, in the Heichal, in the Kodesh, and he would hear the voice coming from the Kodesh Hakadoshim, and it would fill the entire Heichal, and then it would stop when it came to the door of the Heichal, so that nobody outside is able to hear it. Now you have so we see that originally the Shekhinah was on top of the Kaporis. Now you have a pasuk describing that Hashem rode on a kruv, on one of these kruvim, one of these malachim, and flew. Now Rashi says that should be taken out of the Gemara, because what does that have to do with over here? That's a pasuk that's referring to Yitzias Mitzrayim, when Hashem, so to speak, rode on a kruv to come in and save the Jewish people and punish the Mitzrayim. So Rashi says it doesn't belong over here. So Rashi explains like this: since the Gemara is going to quote a pasuk next that says that Hashem's glory, the Shekhinah, came off the kruv, and the kruv, again, we don't mean the ones that are on the Orin, we mean the freestanding ones. That means of necessity it must have gone from the Orin to the kruv at some point. On the other hand, Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out maybe we can defend the Gersa that we have in the Gemara. It shows, in other words, that Hashem, so to speak, uses Kruvim sometimes as if they were his chariot, and therefore that's the Chayis HaKodesh, after all, carry Hashem's throne, so to speak. So therefore, the Gemara can be using that to show that there was a point when Hashem said, fine, my Shekhinah is not going to be on top of the Orin where it belongs, but it will be on top of one of the Kruv. Next, then Yechezkel has several nevuos over there where he describes seeing the Shekhinah progressively leaving the Beis Hamikdash. And the idea was he's supposed to tell the people that, and he did, in order to motivate them to do tshuva, which unfortunately they didn't. So he describes the glory of Hashem, the Shekhinah, lifted off the kruv on which it was. And again, we mean one of those freestanding kruvim. El Miftan Abayis, and went to the threshold of the building, the threshold of the Heichal. So we see, therefore, we have those first few stages that it started on the Kaporis, and then it went to the Kruv, and then from there it went to the, and then from there it went to the threshold. Next, when we miftan the chotzer, then it went from the threshold out to the chotzer. Dichtiv, another pasuk in Yechezkel, by Yoram Kvod Hashem al Kruv. Al Miftan Abayis, the glory of Hashem that had been on the Kruv lifted off onto the threshold, and then vayimoleh habayis ha'sa'onon, then the house, the heichel was filled with the cloud of the Shechina, v'achotzer molas noga kvod Hashem, and the chotzer was filled with the glory of the glow of the glory of Hashem. So we see that now the glory of Hashem, the Shechina, had left the heichel and left behind, so to speak, only a cloud, and now moved out to the chotzer. Since this is in Perek Yud, in the previous pasuk, the previous one is in Perek Tes, then he's going in order and he's describing how first it went to the miftan and then it went to the chotzer. Now, the next stage was the Mizbeach. Here we have to go back to an Uriu Navi. The next pasuk is from Amos. Now, Amos lived about 200 years before Yechezkel, but he, since logically the progression must be to go further and further out, Rashi explains, there'd be no reason why the Shechina would go to the Mizbeach and then go backwards back into the Heichel. Therefore, we have to understand that it means that Amos is saying a Nevuah about what's going to happen in the future 200 years after his times. And the pasuk says, he says, I saw Hashem standing on the Mizbeach. So in other words, he's seeing a Nevuah that there's going to come a point when Hashem is going to be standing, that the Shechina is going to be standing on the Mizbeach. Next, Mizbeach Lagag, then it goes to the roof, where again, the roof has a lesser level of kusha. Dichtiv, you have a pasuk in Mishlei, Tov L'Sheves Alpinas Gog. It's better to sit on the corner of a roof. And the pasuk continues, "Me'eshes midyonim v'chaas," more than when you have a tov l'shavas apinas gog. "Me'eshes midyonim uveis chover." Actually, Rashi actually quotes the end of the pasuk from the other one. This first one, Marsha points out, Rashi has the ends of the pesukim out of order. The end of the pasuk, "Tov l'shavas apinas gog," finishes, "Me'eshes midyonim v'chaas." More than being with a wife who's quarrelsome and makes you angry. In other words, poshut pshat doesn't mean exactly what it sounds like, that if a husband's not getting along with his wife, he'd do better to go sit on the corner of the roof and stay away from her until things blow over. Here Hashem is saying, so to speak, the Jewish people are like a quarrelsome wife who are trying to anger me with avodah zarah and other avodas. So therefore Hashem is saying, I don't need to be here, I'll go sit on the corner of the roof. So therefore the Shechina is going up to the roof. From there it goes to the wall, and that means specifically the wall of the Azara. Marsha points out that since you have, the Gemara is going to soon quote the pasuk from Yechezkel that says it left the city and went to the mountain, so there's no stopover in between on the city, on the wall of the city. Therefore, we have to understand that the wall here means the wall of the Azara. Dichtiv, here's another pasuk from Amos. V'hinei Hashem nitzav achoymas anoch. The pasuk says Hashem is standing on a wall of anoch. There's a number of explanations in the Mefoshim what anoch means. It means a wall that's plumbed, meaning, in other words, where you use a plumb line like builders do to make sure that the wall is exactly vertical. It means a wall that's going to be knocked down. There's a number of different explanations, including one very interesting one that it refers actually to the Azara, we know is also the seat of the Sanhedrin. And the Sanhedrin consisted of 71 members, which is Gematria Anoch. Anyway, whatever the case, he sees Hashem standing on the wall, so therefore, again, indicating that he sees B'nevuah, there's going to come a point when the Shechina is standing on the wall of the Azara. Then, from there into the city of Yerushalayim, Dichtiv, Pasuk says, Kol Hashem la'ir yikra, the voice of Hashem calls out to the city. So we understand, in other words, at that point, the Shechina is in the city, in the city, outside the Har HaBayis, and calling out to the people, do tshuva. Because after all, that's the whole point of this gradual withdrawal. Rashi says it's because Hashem is, so to speak, reluctant to leave, and is looking for and is hoping that the Jewish people will do tshuva. Then it went to the mountain, meaning Har HaZesim, Dichtiv, as the Yechezkel describes in another one of his nevuos, Vayal Kvod Hashem Me'al Teicha'ir, the glory of Hashem lifted up from within the city, Vayamad Alahur, and stood on the mountain, on Har HaZesim. We also have, it says, when the Shechina returns, and at the end of the war of Gog and Magog, you have the Omdu Ragla, Vayamahu Al Har HaZesim. Hashem will, so to speak, stand on Har HaZesim, and from there, we enter Yerushalayim. Yechezkel, by the way, describes later on in his Sefer, the end of Yechezkel, where he described the third Beis Hamikdash, Shibanim Heir of Yemenu, is almost like a mirror image of the beginning of the Sefer. At the beginning, he's describing the withdrawal of the Shechina from the Beis Hamikdash, and he concludes it by describing the third Beis Hamikdash, and he describes how the Shekhinah comes back in. So he says that it stood on the mountain. So therefore, we see that was the next stage. That was the eighth stage where it went to the mountain. Or mehar the midbar. Then the Shekhinah went to the desert. Dichtiv, another pasuk in Mishlei, Tov Sheves be'eretz midbar. Better to live in a wilderness land. The end of the pasuk. So again, Rashi quotes the end of the pasuk of the other pasuk, but actually the end of the pasuk. The first pasuk ends me'eshes midyanim u'beis chaver. The first one about sitting on the roof ends off the me'eshes midyanim u'beis chaver, better than being with a quarrelsome wife who brings in a friend. Meaning the mashal is, for example, imagine a married woman who brings in somebody else into the household other than her husband. The nimshal is that the Jewish people are bringing avodah zarah into the hayfal, and Hashem is saying, so to speak, there's not room for the two of us. Now the pasuk says, Tov Sheves be'eretz midbar, me'eshes midyanim b'chas, better than a quarrelsome wife who makes him angry, which is what the Jewish people are doing to Hashem. So therefore Hashem is saying, better I'll be in the desert rather than among them. Midbar also Yoshua Mokoma, and then from the midbar it went up to and returned to its place in Shemayim, Shenema, as the Pasuk says, as reported before, Elach Ashova al Mokomi, Hashem says, I'll go and return to my place, Ad Asher Yeshomu, until they feel guilty, until they realize what they've done, and then the Pasuk goes on to say, and then they'll seek out my face and they'll do tshuva. So Hashem is saying, meanwhile, until they do, the Shekhinah is gonna have to stay Lamayim. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Shisha Chadoshim Nisak V'Shchina LeYisrael B'Midbar. For 6 months, the Shekhinah is waiting for the Jewish people in the Midbar. Shema Yachzur B'Tshuva. In order, in case they do Tshuva. Veloy, and they didn't. Kivin Shalei Chazru, and they didn't do Tshuva. Amra, then the Shekhinah said, Tipach Nafshan or Atzman, let their souls or themselves, Tipach, which means like be disappointed, literally means like blown up. The eyes of the Rishoyim will fail. Always in Tanakh, when you have an expression, Rashi mentions in B'chukosai, for example, when a person is looking forward to something and then they end up getting disappointed because it doesn't happen, it's called Kilyan Einayim. So here, Ve'enu Rishoyim Techlana, the Rishoyim are going to suffer this Kilyan Einayim, this disappointment, Umonis Ovad Minhem. And a refuge has been lost from them, the sikvasa mapach nafesh, and their hope is just going to be a disappointment. So in other words, that here, their strength, what protects them, which is the Shekhinah, went away from them, and therefore now they're vulnerable. The Midrash should make a big point of the fact that the Shekhinah needed to leave the Beis HaMikdash, and otherwise the Goyim never could have taken it over and destroyed it. In fact, the Medrash mentions that I think it was either Nebuchadnezzar or Titus, maybe both of them, whatever, that they're crowing and priding themselves on how they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and a voice comes from Shemayim and says, all you did was as if a flower was already ground and you ground it. It's as if the person was already dead and you killed it. Like, what have you accomplished? In other words, the Beis HaMikdash is just a shell without the Shekhinah in it, and that's what you were able to destroy. You would never have been able to if the Shekhinah was there. What's the 6 month dafka? Marsha gives a long explanation over here that from Asara B'Tavis until Shiva Asa B'Tamuz, or until Tes Tamuz, because we learned previously that by the first Beis HaMikdash, the way it says in the Pasuk, the walls of Yerushalayim were breached on Tes Tamuz, is 6 months. So now in actual history, it was longer than that, because from the beginning of the siege of Yerushalayim until Yerushalayim was breached was about 2.5 years. But in terms of the calendar, it's 6 months. So Marsha says that's the 6 months that Hashem was waiting for them to do tshuva. And then Tes Tamuz, that Hashem, so to speak, gave up and then returned the Shekhinah up Lamaila. And that's the day when Nebuchadnezzar's army, when the Kastim breached the walls of Yerushalayim and they stopped bringing the Korban Tumah. He brings in this connection we know just the other day we had the eclipse, and the Gemara mentions in Sukkah, as we've learned before, that when there's an eclipse of the sun, it's a simen ra l'ovikovim, because they follow the sun. So therefore, in keeping with that, now what happens is, from Tevis until Tammuz, the sun is progressively getting stronger. Tevis is the time of the winter solstice, when the sun is as far south as it's going to be in its orbit, and therefore in the northern hemisphere, it's as cold as it's going to get. Then it starts gradually moving northward and getting stronger, and the energy that we get from it becomes stronger and stronger until Tammuz is at its peak, and then it starts receding. So those 6 months, then, in keeping with that, the Goyim during that time, who are represented by the sun, are getting stronger and stronger. And so they're thinking, some way, so some osas, as the pasuk says, they think that their signs are real, legitimate signs. They think that the signs in Shemayim point to their victory, and they don't realize that it's all Hashem running the show. And you have many psukim. He goes on to explain psukim in Kapitel Ein Dalad, which talks about the Churban, that refers to all of this. So therefore, so for those 6 months, then, Hashem is waiting for the Jewish people to do tshuva, and they didn't. And therefore the Shekhinah went up to Shemayim. In the end now we have from Tisha B'Av is already the time when the moon is getting larger. It starts getting larger from Rosh Chodesh, from the Molad, until the 15th. And yet, during that time, as it says in the pasuk, we didn't see our signs, that even though that's the time when the moon is waxing, nevertheless, we didn't have, Hashem didn't help, that our mazel and our success should be waxing, because it didn't fit with Hashem's plans, and it didn't fit with how we were behaving. So therefore, ultimately, then that's the 6 months, and that's the sikvasim makach nafesh. That, in other words, that Maharsha says, really what it is not really the Rishoyim are disappointed in a sense. It's Hashem who's disappointed, because he wanted the Jewish people to do tshuva, and they didn't follow through. But the pasuk is talking it in terms of the Rishoyim, like the Rishoyim are going to be the ones disappointed out of respect to Hashem, because after all, it's the Rishoyim who brought all this about. So those are the 10 masoris of the Shechina. Then the Gemara continues, Chnegdan Golsi Sanhedrin Doyla Gemara. The fact that the Sanhedrin went into Golos is for 10 times, that's Gemara that we know only the Kabbalah from our Rebbe. Now Rashi explains this, that the Shekhinah withdrew in those 10 stages was the first Beis Hamikdash. The Sanhedrin moving around from place to place that we're going to describe now is before and after the Churban of the second Churban. However, Maharsha points out that actually it may be that even by the first Beis Hamikdash, maybe also the Sanhedrin had to, given that the first stage was to leave the Lushkas HaGazis, and the Gemara elsewhere explains the reason is because there were more prevalent Rotzchim, and therefore the Sanhedrin decided we can't judge them anymore, and the only choice is to leave the Lushkas HaGazis, and now we can't judge Dinei Farshas anymore. Well, in the first Beis Hamikdash, we know there was a problem of Avodah Zarah, Gilad Ayis, and Shfichas Damim. Therefore, it's logical to assume, says Maharsha, that before Churban Bayis Rishon, they also had to move, for the same reason. And therefore, the rest of the, even though the specific golosin that we're mentioning over here were during and after the second Churban, it's very possible that there were similar ones to different places before the first Churban as well. So the 10 places are as follows. Melishkas HaGozis L'chanutis. The first one was they left Lishkas HaGozis, which is their office in the Beis Hamikdash, and moved to Chanuyas. So Chanuyas literally means stores. So Rashi explains there were stores, there were areas of stores on the Har HaBayis. The pashtus, because people are coming to buy things for korbanos or whatever. The point is, again, that this way, only when the Sanhedrin is headquartered in Lushkas HaGazis, only then can they judge Dini Nefashis. So now, when they were seeing that Rotzchim are becoming more prevalent, so first of all, as we know, a Sanhedrin is not supposed to execute people too often. They have to try every which way to find a schus for the person. But besides that, also, some of these people were very highly politically connected, and the Sanhedrin didn't have the ability to judge them. So therefore, they decided the best thing to do is to leave the Lushkas HaGazis. And now, at this point, we can't judge Dini Nefashos anymore. Therefore, at this point, in other words, we're going to have to leave it to Hashem to deal with such people. This was, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, it was 40 years before the Churban. With that said, by the way, Tosfos mentions in a couple of places, it may be that there were certain times during those 40 years when maybe they returned there on special occasions to judge individual cases of Dini Nefashis. Anyway, so that's the first one. Umechanuyas liYerushalayim. Then at some point they left Chanuyas and moved into the city of Yerushalayim proper. Yerushalayim liYavne. The next one was to Yavne. Now, that's the famous thing where Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai goes to Aspasianus, has himself smuggled out of the city and goes to Aspasianus and tells him, Ten liYavne v'chachameha. Some historians say that maybe actually the Sanhedrin was already located in Yavne at that point, and Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai is just asking Aspasianus to make it official and let them be there and not persecute them. Others say that they actually moved at that time.
Yes, the king.
that's yeah. Aspasianus was the Roman general, and he told him, "You're going to be. They're going to appoint you the emperor." And when the news comes that in fact he was, then Aspasianus says, "I can you can ask for anything you want." And Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai asked him for Yavne v'Chachameha and the dynasty of Rav Gamliel the Nasiim and doctors for a tzaddik. Yeah, it's in the story in Anizokin and in Perek Anizokin and Gittin. Why didn't ask for the Mismikdash? The Gemara discusses that. Yeah, we'll eventually get to that. Naniak of the Hashem. Yeah. So that was to Yavne. Umi Yavne la Usha. Then from Yavne they moved to Usha. Now Rashi explains the idea is basically they moved wherever the Nasi moved to. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, who was the Nasi, or at least interim Nasi for a period of time, he lived in Yavne. Therefore, the Sanhedrin moved there. Later on, Ram Gamliel lived in Usha, and therefore the Sanhedrin moved to Usha. Now Rashi actually says Ram Gamliel Hazokin, but that doesn't seem to be a printing mistake. Ram Gamliel Hazokin passed away about 20 years before the Churban. The Pashtos, he means Ram Gamliel the Yavne, the usual Ram Gamliel in Shas, the one who Rabbi Yeshua was his av based in. Why they moved around, Rashi doesn't explain. The Sefer Doros HaRishonim on Jewish history explains that actually it had to do with what's going on with the Roman emperors. So he explains like this. You had Aspasianus was the emperor. After him was his son Titus. And Titus, since, as we know from the story over there in Gittin, he had a mosquito pecking around in his brain. He didn't have much ability to harm the Jews. Then, though, came his brother, a fellow named Domitian, who was a terrible anti-Semite. And the Chachamim realized under his rule, it's too dangerous for us to be in Yavne. And therefore, they moved to Usha, which is in the Galil, which is in the north of Eretz Yisrael, where it would be quiet. Then you have the next one in the Gemara, Usha Yavne. Then from Usha, they went back to Yavne. So Doros HaRishonim explains, eventually Domitian was assassinated. Besides that, he was bad for the Jews. He wasn't really much better to the Romans either. So eventually some of his servants and ministers and whatever assassinated him. The next emperor, a fellow named Nerva, was a decent fellow. So therefore, under his rule, the Chachamim figured it's safe to return to Yavne. Unfortunately, he ruled over only for a short time. And the next one after him, Trajan, was also a big anti-Semite. We have it mentioned in various places in the Gemara. So from Usha, they had to again leave Yavne and go to Usha, where it was relatively safe. Eventually, then your next one you have is Me'usha to Shfarim. Then the next one after Usha is Shfarim. There's another town in the Galil. It's actually close to Usha. In the story in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, when it tells the story of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava giving smicha to five or six of the Chachamim when the Romans had outlawed it, the Gemara mentions he was in a valley, in a mountain pass between Usha and Shfarim. So they're relatively close. The idea would be, he explains that by this time you're talking about this is after the war of Bar Kokhba and after the whole shmad that the Romans did over there. So after that, when the Sanhedrin was finally able to reconvene, they decided we need to keep an even lower profile. And by now, Usha was too well known as their location. So therefore, they moved to Shfarim, which is the next town over. Shfarim Beis Sha'arim. The next one was Beis Sha'arim, which was where Rebbe. We find in a couple of places in Shas that Rebbe lived for a period of time in Beis Sha'arim. In particular, they found over there, archaeologically, they found a whole area of burials over there. Rebbe himself was buried over there. They found an inscription. Many Jews from all over the world came to be buried over there. So Rebbe, for a period of time, lived there. Apparently, it was like a central city in that part of the world. When we Beis Sha'arim with Tzipori, then from there to Tzipori, the Gemara mentions in Ksubas that later in life, Rebbe wasn't feeling well, so he moved to Tzipori, which is on top of a mountain, and therefore the air is fresher, and that would be better for his health. The Medrash says on it that he lived there for 17 years, and he said on himself, Vayichi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim, Shvaas Yoshana, just as Yaakov lived his best years for 17 years in Mitzrayim, the same way I had my best 17 years in Tzipori. Tzipori to Tveria. And then from Tzipori, they went to Tveria. Rashi explains that Tveria was in the times of Antoninus, as we find, for example, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, where Antoninus asks Rebbe, he says, "I want one of the things I want to accomplish is to have Tveria made into a. I want to free it from taxes. I want to put out an official law that the citizens of Tveria, who include Rebbe himself and many of his Talmidim and so forth, are exempt from Roman taxes." And he asks Rebbe for advice how to accomplish that. So we see, therefore, from that Rebbe lived in Tveria. With that said, Doros HaRishonim says it may not have been. What? So before that was saying Rebbe lived in Beis Sha'arim and in Tzipori. But with that said, though, Dota sort of showing him says maybe actually not necessarily. Maybe Antoninus mentioned Tveria only because it was the biggest city in the area. But Rebbe himself may not have lived in Tveria, especially its low-lying wouldn't have been very good for his health. Rather, after Rebbe's times, then they moved to Tveria because, in particular in Rebbe Yechon's times, we find that the central yeshiva of Eretz Yisrael, which is the Sanhedrin, was located in Tveria. Anyway, Tveria amukam mikulam. Tveria is the deepest of all of them. Rashi explains it means they were the deepest. They were in the worst possible situation among all of those places. It also means that physically, Tveria is the most low-lying of all those areas. It's by the shore of the Kinneret, a few hundred feet below sea level. Shenema, as the pasuk says, v'shafalt me'eretz tidaberi, you will be low down and you will speak from the ground. So in other words, as if they're prostrate and lying on the ground and speaking up from there, and you'll speak, you'll express your words from the dust. So in other words, there's going to come a point when they're in the lowest possible place. Rebbe Lozo says it wasn't 10 Golias, it was only 6. Now, the Pashtus, he's not arguing on the actual historical facts, but he's combining together some of the ones. For example, when we said they went from Tveria, when they went from Yavne to Usha, and from Usha to Yavne, and from Yavne back to Usha, so he would count that all as one thing rather than back, and he'd count Yavne one time and Usha one time, and maybe he would count the ones in Yerushalayim itself as all one thing, because after all, it's all within the city of Yerushalayim. So therefore, he arrives at 6. Shenema, he says, you have another pasuk in Yeshaya that hints at 6. Ki heishach yoshvim morim. The pasuk says Hashem has brought low those who sat in the heights. So it's referring to the Sanhedrin who originally sat in the Har Abayis and Lushkas Hagazus, which is the almost the highest place in that part of Eretz Yisrael. Kiryat Nisgava, the exalted city. Yashpilana, he will lower it. Yashpila ad oretz, he will lower it down to the ground. Yagiena ad ofo, he will make it touch the dust. So you have over there, then you have Heshach is 1, Yashpilena is 2, Yashpila is 3, Ad Oretz is 4, Yagiena is 5, and Ad Ofer is 6. In other words, Rashi says, because otherwise the Pasuk is very wordy and repetitious, so therefore the extra words in the Pasuk teach us to doubt it that way. Uchtiv, and then the Pasuk continues, Tumasena Rogel, it will be trampled by the feet, Raglei Oni, the feet of the poor people, Pamei Dalim, the footsteps of the poor. Marsha explains over here the context of the pasuk is actually talking about the enemies of the Jewish people, the city of the famous wealthy city of Tsur and other ones like that always harassed the Jewish people and were looking forward to them being defeated, and now they themselves are going to be destroyed, and the Raglei Oni refers to Melech HaMashiach. So he says, but we're saying the same thing. In other words, that we're saying that the Golias of the Sanhedrin, eventually, when the footsteps of the Oni, when the footsteps of Mashiach come, then as the Gemara is going to go on to say, then the Sanhedrin will be reestablished from that low down place in Tveria, and from there they'll go to Yerushalayim. And in fact, he points out the context. If you look at the next couple of psukim in Yeshaya over there, that refers to the mishpat of Hashem. And then we can see that it's all referring to the Sanhedrin, how it was beaten down and then put as low down as possible, and from there, from that low place, it's going to be restored. So Amar Rabbi Yechon, Amar Shama Sidin Ligoil, from that point, they're going to be redeemed. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Yisnari may offer, shake yourself off from the dust, Kumi Shvi Yerushalayim, come sit, get up and sit Yerushalayim and be at peace. So we see, in other words, that from that, from Yerida Tzarech Aliyah, all that being beaten down and then trampled into the dust is in order to have a greater Aliyah from that later on.
All that area.
So the Rambam, in fact, mentions in Hilchas Sanhedrin, Kabbalah hi biyadim, the Chachamim have a Kabbalah, that when the Sanhedrin is reestablished, then it'll first be established in Tveria, or Misham, they're talking Lamikdash, and from there they'll move to the Beis Mikdash. He's basing himself on this Gemara over here. Some years back, Steinsaltz, all of Ashalim, tried to convene a new Sanhedrin, and Taka, they started out in Tveria based on that. Okay. Further on in the parak, it talks about, now that it's talking about the dinim of most of the dinim of the shofar, so it goes on to talk about the tefillas of Rosh Hashanah. You have the extra brachas in Shemana Esrei of Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, and how exactly those fit together with the brachas. The Gemara brings a few different opinions where exactly. Now, given you have like this, the regular Shemana Esrei And Shabbos and Yom Tov is seven brachas. Here you have three extra brachas, Malchus, Sechronus, and Shofarus. But the fact is, you don't have 10 brachas. In the end, you only have nine. So one of these three has to be combined with one of the seven. And so the Mishnah mentions a couple of different opinions about how you fit them together. The Gemara in Brachas, by the way, explains why Takan nine is because you have in Chana's Tefillah, she mentions Hashem's name nine times, and since Rosh Hashanah Nifkada Chana, she was one of the ones that Hashem remembered and said that she's going to become pregnant the following year on Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, we associate our Tefillah on Rosh Hashanah with her, and we have nine Brachas. Agav, worth mentioning in that connection, an interesting point that the Gaonim and the Rishonim talk about. It used to be a very common minhag in many kehilas that not everybody davened the nine brachas on Shemoneh Esrei. There was a popular minhag. The Baal HaMorah mentions it. There a lot of other Rishonim mention that the tzibur would daven seven brachas in Rosh Hashanah Musaf. They would daven a Rosh Hashanah Musaf similar to Rosh Hashanah Shachris. It would be except that you'd have the psukim about the korbanos over there. Only the Chazan would say the brachas, Malchus, Sechronus, and Shofarus. Then over time, that minhag changed, and there's a number of the Gaonim were asked about it, and they said you shouldn't change, but nevertheless, eventually it changed, and that's the way it is universally. An interesting point is how that became so. There's the famous story of the Dalad Shvuyim. There's a famous story where there were four Talmid Chachamim who were on a boat, and they were captured. They were taken prisoner by pirates, and then the pirates brought them around to different places all around the Mediterranean. And each one of them, in each place, the Jews were able to be Poyda Shvuyim, one of those Chachamim. The Ravid Alevi tells the story in a Sefer Seder HaKabbalah. It happened a little over 1,000 years ago in the mid 10th century. So he describes that these Chachamim came from the city of Bari, which is in South Italy, which at that time was a tremendous Mokum Torah. The Rabbeinu Tam said about the city of Bari a couple hundred years later, he said, Al Derech, like you have the Pasuk, Kimi Tzion Teitzei Torah, or Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim, he said, they used to say, Kimi Bari Teitzei Torah, to show what a tremendous place of Torah it was. Anyway, these four Chachamim came from there, so one of them was ransomed in Mitzrayim, another one in Kairouan in Tunisia, and the third one, Rav Moshe Rav Hanoich, was ransomed in Spain. Anyway, the vort is, Dodos Rishonim explains, since these Chachamim came from Italy, and they weren't so much in touch in Italy, they weren't as much in touch with the Gaonim in Bavel, because they're living under different governments. Bavel is ruled over by the Muslims at that point, and Italy is ruled over by Christians, so it's not so easy to get to even send letters from one to the other. They had the Kabbalah in Italy that everybody should be saying the nine brachas on Shemoneh Esrei. So when they moved to these different kehilas and became the Rabbanim over there, then they instituted that minhag. So now these places are wondering, wait, our old minhag was to do only seven brachas, and they would ask the Gaonim, and the Gaonim would tell them, yeah, you're supposed to do only seven brachas at Zibur. But nevertheless, the minhag of these Dalad Shvuyim, of the minhag of Italy, eventually won out, and nowadays it's the universal thing that everybody says nine brachas on Rosh Hashanah. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara deals with the first, how do we know the order of brachas that we should be saying? So Tana Rabbana, minayin sha'imim avos, how do we know that we start out with the bracha of avos? That we elakei Avraham, elakei Yitzchok, elakei Yaakov. Shenema, the pasuk says, hovu l'Hashem b'nei Elim, give to Hashem, you sons of the mighty ones. So hovu l'Hashem, mention in front of Hashem, the schus of the mighty ones of the avos. Marashah says, actually, you can break up. The word b'nei can go with the previous words. Hovu l'Hashem b'nei. You children mention to Hashem, Elim, the powerful ones. So therefore, that's that bracha. Ominayin shayim gvuras. How do we know the next bracha is gvuras at the giver? Shenema, hovu l'Hashem, kovid v'oiz. The pasuk continues, give to Hashem strength and power. Speak of Hashem's power and strength, which is in the bracha of gvuras. Ominayin shayim kedushas Hashem. Then the next one is the bracha of kedushas Hashem at the kodesh. Shenema, the next pasuk continues, hovu l'Hashem, kvod shmoi, give to Hashem the glory of his name, ishtachvu l'Hashem behadras kodesh, and bow before Hashem in the glory of holiness. So that's the theme of the next bracha, which is the kedusha of Hashem. In fact, Maharsha points out by all of them it says hovu instead of tefillah, where the word hovu is gematria echad, is the same gematria as the word echad. And the halacha is the first three brachas of Shemoneh Esrei actually count as one long bracha, which is why you have the din. If you make a mistake in them, for example, you say mashal baruach moedah geshem during the summer, or you don't say amelach hakadosh during aseret simchat Torah, you have to start all over, because those three are considered one bracha. Then Then how do we know at that point you say the three brachas, malchus, zichrinus, and shofris? Tanya Rabbi Eliezer Omer Dichtiv. The pasuk says shabbosin zichrin trua mikra kodesh. Rosh Hashanah is a day of resting, a day of remembering trua, a day of holy calling. So he explains shabbosin zekdusha sayyim. The word shabbosin refers to the bracha about the holiness of the day after v'chartanu until makadosh yisrael v'azmanim or on Rosh Hashanah makadosh yisrael v'yem azikaron. Zikaron elu zichronis. Then comes zikaron, which refers to zichronis. Trua elu shofris. Trua refers to shofris. Now in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer says that you do have to say, he knows you have to say malchus, but he says you combine together malchus, he says you combine with the bracha atah kodesh. In fact, we have actually on Nusach, on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, has a much longer atah kodesh. You have the extra paragraphs of v'chein yiskadesh, v'chein ten pachtecha, and so forth. I've seen a suggestion that maybe that's left over, even though primarily the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, who says that we combine together malchus with Dusha Sayyim, we start out of a Hartanu, and in the middle of it, we say Aleinu and the Pesukim of Malchus. Nevertheless, maybe there's something like left over from that opinion that you said in Atta Kodesh. Anyway, Mikra Kodesh, Kadcheo, Basias Malacha. And then the words Mikra Kodesh means that you should declare the day holy to not do Malach. Omalo Rabbi Akiva, but Rabbi Akiva says it doesn't really work out the order. Mipne Mala, Noima Shabbosin Shvois. Why shouldn't we say the word Shabbosin refers to not doing that? Hashem says stop from Malacha. Shabbat Pasuk HaKosuk Tchila. After all, that's what the Pasuk is talking about to begin with. The Pasuk is first saying that this is a day of Mikra Kodesh and a day we call Malacha Savod Yolai Sasu. So we should understand that the word Shabbosin refers to not doing Malacha. El Shabbosin Kacheu Basias Malacha. So Shabbosin is not yet talking about the order of the brachas in davening. It means that the day when you're not allowed to do Malacha, Zikorin Elu Zichronis, Trua Elu Shofris, Mikra Kodesh Zukdusha Sayyim. And the word Mikra Kodesh refers to that you say the bracha of Kedusha Sayyim, that you say the bracha Atav Hartanu, and ending Mikadish Yisrael V'yem HaZikorin, which talks about the Kedusha of the day. So then we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and talk about how do we know that you have malchus in there, and how do we know what the order is. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Geula, Beis Nissen, which is the Yom Ha'Lula of the Rebbe Rashab. So there's the famous sticha of Beis Nissen, Tavshin Memches, which you have an excerpt of it pasted on the walls of 770 over there about the importance you have to add to the life of the Rebbe Mashiach by everybody calling out Yichi HaMelech. This is why we make such a shturim in Ikvus and Mashiach of calling out Ad Nosai, which brings the Geula closer and faster. And Yeshloima, the Rebbe continues that besides that stresses how much we're looking forward and demanding that the Geula should come before Mamash, there's also that includes the point that we're crowning the king. Yichi HaMelech is where, like what they said when Shloima HaMelech, for example, was crowned, and that brings about the coming of David Malka Mashiach. So our Maisa Ha'Iker is to complete our Maaseinu V'Avodaseinu, and that also includes calling out and demanding Ad Masai and calling out Yichi HaMelech David Malka Mashiach as soon and as quickly as possible in a way of Simcha and Chayitz. Continuing with halachas, if your clothes get dirty, if your shoes get dirty, what about if your hand is dirty? So then you can't wipe it on a towel that would normally be used for wiping your hands, because then you might come to wash it on Shabbos. So you would first rinse off the dirt or whatever, and then you could wipe your hands on it.